We're only here with today's talking point. South Sudan's civil war was on the agenda during President Obama's visit to East Africa. Recently, New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof was in South Sudan. He joins us now. Nicholas Kristof, welcome to our program.
Good to be with you, Warren.
You have written that in 2011, you shared the world's exhilaration as South Sudan became independent from Sudan and became the world's newest nation. But now you say it's difficult not to feel despair. Tell us about some of the things you've seen.
Well, one reason everybody was excited about South Sudan gaining independence was that Sudan had committed just enormous, brutal predation on the people of the South for years and for decades. And I think the thing that really struck me the most was now in the civil war that has erupted in South Sudan, you have the parties to it committing the same kinds of atrocities that the North used to commit. You have mass rape, you have murder, you have castration of boys, you have just this kind of catastrophic brutality committed by their own people and in some cases by their own government. I was in one area of marshland where people had taken refuge, and apparently in retaliation for similar massacres a year ago by the other side, government soldiers had burned villages. One man told me that he watched from a distance as South Sudan government soldiers tied up his 15 kids and put them in a grass hut, and then they torched the hut and burned his family alive. And you just hear those kind of things. I mean, that was one area in Unity State where there were particularly a lot of atrocities, but you see people dying of this kind of brutality from the war, and then we're also seeing a looming famine coming and harming those parts of the country, even that are unaffected by the physical fighting, but where people are now dying of hunger.
Describe the discovery you made driving into one city when you saw a woman lying inert on the road.
Yeah, this is in Awil, and this is in the northwest of the country. There is no fighting there. It seems secure, but the fighting elsewhere has cut off this area from food supplies. And the economy is collapsing so that people no longer have any money to buy food. They no longer have food coming in. And so we were driving into the city, and there's a woman collapsed on the road. And so we stopped, and it turned out that she hadn't eaten for 3 days. She had two kids and was kind of desperate to keep them alive, and so she left her village and was hoping to find some kind of work, and then she just collapsed. And then actually just about an hour later, we found exactly the same thing, another woman lying collapsed unconscious on the road. When people, usually when I've seen desperate hunger, it's been babies dying, typically at the time of weaning. What was striking about what we're seeing in South Sudan is that you have adults, and especially women, there's a real gender component of this, women who are starving and dying. And some of the people that I met and talked to, I turned out, have since died.
I take it that one of the women, the first one you described, was in fact the wife of a soldier in the government forces.
That's correct. And she has no idea if he's still alive. He should be sending money back, but he's not, and she doesn't know if that's because he's not being paid or if he can't find a channel to send money back or if he's abandoned her. All she knows is that she has two kids, and she has to feed them. She left her kids with a neighbor. And when I saw her, she didn't know whether her kids were still alive. I met another, a 15-year-old girl who was at the hospital, and her mother had taken her because this girl was dying of starvation. It turned out later that when the mother went back to the village, the two children that she'd left, who had been, she thought, healthy, that they had died as well. I mean, they had died from being left behind because there was no food. And this is kind of staggering, coming in a part of the country where there isn't any fighting, and yet these people are dying of civil war every bit as much as those who were being shot.
You said there's a gender component to this. That goes pretty deep, does it not? Is this a place where men get to eat first?
Yes, it is. Not in every case, but indeed in much of the world, when there isn't enough food to go around, then the fathers and sons eat first, and those who disproportionately die are women and girls.
Back to the man who said he watched his government soldiers burned his family alive. Who did he blame for that?
He blamed the government, and he also blamed the Dinka tribe. There's a strong ethnic component to this. It's not a perfect cleavage, but in general, many of the government supporters are members of the Dinka tribe, and many of the supporters of the opponent of the government, Riek Machar, are members of the Nuer tribe. These people I spoke to were overwhelmingly Nuer, and so it's taken on a strong ethnic component that is going to be really hard to heal when a ceasefire comes. You know, these people have seen things, and many Dinka have suffered extraordinary brutality at the hands of Nuer. So it's, you know, you can have these spasms of cruelty and barbarity that then haunt the country for years or decades to come.
You and President Obama, and prior to him, President George W. Bush, celebrated the diplomacy that brought this country into being. Was there at that point a resolution of the differences between these tribes? Have they subsequently separated, and if so, why?
Well, you never really, solve problems, but you do kind of address them and muffle them, and I think that's to some degree what happened. There were real ethnic tensions in South Sudan. There was very little human capital, but there was a strong excitement about the future. South Sudan has oil, and so there was some promise that the country could actually pay for development. South Sudan was a country where a girl was more likely to grow up to die in childbirth than to grow up to become literate. And that seemed to have a prospect of changing with oil money, with peace. And then you had quite weak leadership on the part of President Salva Kiir. You had leaders from all parties, all groups, trying to enrich themselves and their families and using the state tools to do that. There's been, mind-boggling corruption in the country. And you had Sudan across the border creating mischief. It's my view and that of many people that Sudan is arming and supporting the rebel leader, Riek Machar, as a way of having influence in South Sudan. And I think, for all these reasons, and to some degree maybe from a lack of outside engagement and support, the country fragmented and fell apart. And now I think President Obama said the right things about creating costs for the players. And I think it was right to engage these various players. Ethiopia has been the country that has been most really seriously engaged in trying to bring peace to South Sudan. Some of the neighbor countries have not been particularly helpful.
Ethiopia, a country that, of course, has been accused of all kinds of human rights violations itself. You said in one of your columns that you hoped that President Obama would read them or at least hear the kinds of stories that you had to tell. Do you think he did?
Yeah, I wish that it sort of puts the human stakes on this. I think of a 11-year-old girl I met in this marshland area. Government soldiers were chasing her to rape her. Her mom, sister, her aunt, with a baby at her breast, ran out of the hut to protect the girl and try to stop the soldiers from raping this 11-year-old. At that point, the soldiers shot her aunt dead, shooting her in the chest and thus killing not only the mother but also the baby. And so this 11-year-old girl is now sitting under a tree telling her story, and she, she's been traumatized forever. It's going to be impossible to get her to rebuild relations with the Dinka after this. And I think that's one of the things that we have to bear in mind. This isn't just a temporary issue, but this is going to cast a shadow on South Sudan for years and decades to come, that violence is contagious, and it's so important to address this kind of insecurity early on. We missed one chance. I hope we have another now.
Nicholas Kristof with the New York Times, many thanks for all you do.
Thank you.